As previously announced, here's Bill Resnick talking with Anna Donlan, director of the Center for Food Safety, on farming, soil depletion, and climate change.
Diana Donlan, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Diana Donlan directs the Food and Safety Program for the Center for Food Safety. Last year, Diana wrote for the center a report, Soil and Carbon, Soil Solutions to Climate Problems. Diana Donlan, it seems to me that the climate crisis and global warming, also the water crisis and running out of fresh, clean water around the world, and the food crisis, that much of the food we eat is near without nutrients, these deep problems get lots of attention. And they're pretty well known. But fast-worsening degradation of the planet's soil, it's talked about nearly exclusively in a few academic, scientific circles. Organic farming people talk about it. Yet all of these deep problems are linked. In fact, as your report points out, if we, humanity, can reverse soil degradation, then we will substantially reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we will greatly reduce water scarcity, and we will grow much more nutritious food. Before discussing why that's true, first, I think we have to talk about soil degradation. It's happening all over the planet for the last 150 years, and it's now very, very quickly worsening. What's happening?
Well, thanks, Bill. Soil degradation has actually been going on for centuries, but we've accelerated it in the last 150 years. And humans have always known that there's some sort of relationship between soil fertility and, you know, food production, obviously. But it's only been in recent history that that understanding of soil productivity has been understood to be related to the amount of organic matter or carbon in the soil. And now that we realize that, we have a tremendous opportunity before us because the amount of carbon on our planet is actually fixed. It's just a question, really, of distribution. So we know that there's way too much carbon in our atmosphere, and our atmosphere is obviously overwhelmed.
And it's warming as a result.
And it's warming as a result. But I think a lot of people are surprised to learn that we're deficient in our soils and that that carbon that's in the soil in a solid form is actually missing.
It's been taken out then in some ways. By what? Modern agriculture and deforestation and all of those things?
All those things contribute to it. So deforestation, erosion, clear cutting, the amount of what's called compaction, which is, you know, heavy machinery, like squishing the soil, paving over our soils. We really have treated our soils poorly. We don't appreciate them the same way maybe we appreciate water and some of our other natural resources. We treat soil like dirt. And the very general distinction between soil and dirt is that soil is a living system. And as a living system, it needs to be fed. If you think of soil as the skin of the earth, then you think your skin needs to be covered and it needs to be protected. And what nature does is when we leave nature to her own devices, you never see bare soil in nature. Every little side of the road, you know, ditch, nature will grow something. But we come along and we're constantly, you know, pulling up all the weeds, tearing down the trees, removing the vegetation and exposing the soil microbial life to temperature extremes, extreme heat, extremes of cold, wind, all these things assault the life in the soil and make it very difficult for the soil to carry out its many functions.
Pesticides also take their toll, do they not, on microbes and insects and all of those processes that keep soil healthy?
Sure. You know, it's harder to say definitively which pesticides compromise the soil activity, but there's no question that things like Roundup and glyphosate harm soil microbial life. In fact, they're learning just now that can have an adverse impact at very low dosage. So when you kill those microorganisms that carry out all these functions, it just becomes harder for the soil to do things like hold water, which is one of its primary functions.
What about the ways in which carbon used to be just returned to the soil in natural processes like grasslands? Now we plow up those ancient grasslands or the forests, and the grain and the stalks and the corn cobs and everything, everything's taken away. Nothing is returns to the soil. Is that must also be one of the major sources of the degradation of soils.
Well, in the United States, the whole middle of the country was covered at one time by prairie, and that's where the great bison herds roamed. And we have destroyed about 97% of the American prairie, which was this diversified grassland ecosystem. We only have about 3% of it left. So imagine all that carbon that was released into the atmosphere as that process took place. And what happens is when you take that carbon, and which was in a solid form in the soil, and release it so that it becomes a gas up in the atmosphere, and then there's nothing growing down below, it becomes very hard for the cycle to continue. So as I mentioned earlier, this is all a question of rebalancing the system. Carbon isn't inherently bad. It's just a question of where it is. So we need to get more of it back into the soil. Nature does this, as I mentioned, by having systems that are diverse. And we have a lot of monocultures in our industrial agriculture system. And that's not good for the soil life either, because it's like feeding a steady diet of the same thing all the time. The microorganisms living in the soil, they need a variety of food sources, not just corn and soy.
This is KBU Radio. I'm Bill Resnick talking to Diana Donlan of the Center for Food Safety. She directs the Food and Climate Program for the center. Diana, we've talked about the soil degradation, and in fact, maybe we should say a word about the vast loss of soil in the Great Plains. Some of the soil used to be like 12 foot thick. Now it's like 3 or 4 foot thick. And in some areas of the country, all the soils have disappeared, like in Washington State and the Palouse. That's my understanding.
Well, globally, we've lost about 50 to 70% of the original carbon stock of cultivated soils. So it's very important to draw the distinction between the soils that we manage as humans and the soils that Mother Nature manages. So the soils that in wildlands are in balance, it's just the ones that we manage through our agricultural system. And we're realizing that tillage is very detrimental. So you hear a lot now, even in industrial agriculture, of a move towards no-till and increased cover cropping. And cover cropping is a great start, because if you've ever flown across the country and looked out the window and you see just vast expanses of bare dirt, that is oxidizing carbon. So even if you have an industrial system, but you are planting a crop to keep it covered, to keep the soil covered when you're not growing something that you're going to process, you're helping keep the soil alive. Because otherwise it's like not feeding the soil for months at a time.
And you're allowing it to be blown away.
Exactly.
And eroded. If you get a storm and the water runs on this bare soil, it's in the rivers in no time.
Sure. And, you know, soil is really important for our water system. So what happens when you have this erosion and you have this compaction and all these different things, what's called effective rainfall is reduced. So when it rains, you really want that water to percolate back into the ground and recharge our aquifers. So there's a certain amount of water on our planet that you see in rivers and you see in lakes and so forth, but there's a lot more that's held in the soil as soil moisture. That water is filtered by the soil and it's held by the soil, and it has a cooling effect on our temperature. But when the soil structure is damaged by tillage, what's called the soil aggregates, which are little pockets of air, are compressed, and that doesn't allow the rain to infiltrate into the soil. So what happens when it does rain is the water sheets off, and that rain isn't effective. So it could rain, you know, a normal amount of rainfall. Say that you're in an area where the average rainfall is 25 inches. You could get that 25 inches of rain per year, and not very many of those inches would be percolating back into the soil, because the soil structure is damaged. Most of that rain is sheeting off, causing flooding. So now we see with climate change, we see this kind of pendulum swinging wildly from not enough rain to too much rain. So you see flooding all the time. Well, a lot of that flooding has to do with the fact that we aren't slowing the water down. We aren't sinking it back into the ground. It's just coming, you know, faster and faster and going right back into the ocean with a lot of sediment.
With a lot of sediment, yeah. This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland. Bill Resnick here talking to Diana Donlan of the Center for Food Safety. She directs the Food and Climate Program. We talked about how rebuilding soil carbon would greatly reduce the water crisis, keeping the water on the land and, in fact, percolating slowly and providing more for reservoirs all year round. We also talked about why nutrition would be better, because in healthy soil, the microbes themselves produce nutrients for the plants, which then go into the food. Tell us why rebuilding the soils would have a substantial effect on global warming.
Sure. Well, I'm sure that radio listeners have heard of this number 350. And there's a big organization, an international organization, headed up by Bill McKibben called 350.org. And 350 is the number that climate scientists have told us that we should not exceed. And that's the amount of carbon that's in our atmosphere. Well, we have already exceeded that number. We're at over 400 parts per million. It's around 403 or something like
that. Of carbon dioxide.
Of carbon dioxide. Yeah. So even if miraculously somehow, some way, we stopped burning fossil fuels planet-wide tomorrow, we would still have this excess carbon in the atmosphere, and we have to draw that carbon down. Now, Mother Nature has just the most elegant and ingenious way to do that, and it's called photosynthesis. And photosynthesis is the process that actually removes carbon dioxide from the atmospheric circulation and draws it down into plant matter. And as much as 40% of what's photosynthesized by a plant goes through the roots into the soil. So the other 60% the plant is using to, you know, grow stems and leaves and so forth. But you'll remember from your elementary school science class that plants draw in CO2, they release that oxygen and we get to breathe it, and then they take that carbon and they use it. So this is how we can begin to draw down atmospheric CO2 and address global warming is by increasing photosynthetic activity on our planet. NASA is doing all these amazing satellite projections around the world, and they actually are able to show, Bill, this is really incredible, through their satellites, in the northern hemisphere, we have deciduous forests, and these are trees that leaf out in the spring. And you can actually see on a planetary basis the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere go down when it's spring because there's so much photosynthetic activity taking place in the northern part of the planet. So our goal as a society, as a global society, should be we want the carbon inputs from photosynthesis to exceed the carbon losses. Okay? So if we can increase the amount of photosynthetic activity, and it sounds simplistic and it sounds unscientific, but if you think about how much we've destroyed on this planet in terms of, you know, not only rainforest but also temperate forest, deciduous forest, and add that up with the figure that I mentioned earlier, 97% of the prairie in this country being plowed under. That's a lot less photosynthetic activity going on this planet. So for people at home, every little thing you plant in your garden, it's important. You just want to have a diversity of plants in your garden. You want to keep your soil covered. You want to try and mimic nature to the best extent possible. And you want to have what are called perennials. And perennials are the plants that live year after year. And those are better at storing carbon because they have longer roots, so the carbon is pushed down further into the soil profile and it's more stable. And you don't have this, what happens with annuals, which a corn plant, for instance, would be, most of our agriculture, our commodity agriculture, is in annual production. You pull up the plant or the plant dies at the end of the season and those roots go up and that carbon goes back up into the atmosphere. So we want to encourage more perennial forms of agriculture because that is a more stable form of carbon.
There really are answers. We have trillions and trillions and trillions of little machines all over the planet that are feeding carbon, that are desperate for life. That is, these little seeds grow and they become plants, and these plants like to live like all life. And they take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and put it into the ground. Trillions of them. And here we are spending huge amounts of money trying to develop clean coal. It's all absurd, it seems to me. What we have to do is use all those trillions of plants and add trillions more. That is, encourage their growth by various sorts of agricultural methods and reforestation.
We still need to reduce our fossil fuel emissions.
There's right.
Absolutely no question about it. And our campaign is not saying that we don't need to do that. We just need to add more tools to our toolbox. What we're saying is we need to do both. So we need to simultaneously stop putting so much CO2 and other gases up into the atmosphere and simultaneously draw down what is already up there in excess. So just to give you some sense of how large a reservoir soil is, the soil carbon pool right now, even with its deficit, is about 3 times larger than the atmospheric pool of carbon. So the atmosphere really can't hold as much carbon as the soil can.
That's incredible. It seems to me that we fully know what has to be done, that is, keep the carbon in the ground and restore our soils and do many other things, change our diets some, have transport that's electric and use renewable energy, all of these things. Restoring our soils, it seems to me, is extremely important. Let's talk about why is it so difficult to move towards regenerating and rebuilding our soils? What's going on?
Well, the people that started the climate movement, very emissions-focused, industrialized countries such as our own, and agriculture was really not considered. And, you know, we're trying to bring a systems approach to this problem and really, instead of seeing nature as our adversary, enlist nature's help, because nature has tremendous capacity for self-renewal. So if we start rebuilding soil carbon, which we now know how to do, we can start moving these systems in a way that's regenerative, that have all these co-benefits of increased water retention, of increased food security. Even if we didn't have a climate problem, we would still need to rebuild soil carbon for our food and water security. So this is just a no-lose proposition. It's a win-win-win proposition to rebuild soil carbon. But what that awareness has been missing, soil during the 20th century was looked at as a chemistry set, and we didn't really realize that it was this living system with all these symbiotic relationships between the roots and these specialized fungi like mycorrhizae and all these earthworms and nematodes and so on and so forth. We just looked at it as sort of a medium to add chemicals to and prop plants up. That awareness is changing. People are starting to study soil science now. We now have new tools, but it's really the last frontier. We know more about the stars overhead, I think it was Leonardo da Vinci who said this, than we do about the soil processes under our feet. So it's really a great time to be involved with soil science and have a new appreciation for soil. And I'd love to have your listeners look at a short film that we showed at the recent climate conference in Paris. They can go to YouTube. The name of the 4-minute film, which we had narrated by Michael Pollan, is called Soil Solutions to Climate Problems. We have it in Chinese, and we have it in French and Finnish, and we're getting it in more languages. But it really lays out this opportunity in a very short film, and we encourage people to watch it and share it with other people so that this soil carbon opportunity and avenue for hope is more widely known.
Diana Donlan, what we haven't talked about is the struggle on the land now for agroecology principles, and various kinds of agribusiness interests are loath to change. They've got a profit model and they just want to keep going, and particularly around the world there are real predators who are destroying land very, very rapidly, like in the Amazon. It seems to me that becomes even more important to stop that and move towards regenerative and building soils. I'm afraid we don't have time, but maybe we can do that sometime soon. So I just want to thank you, Diana Donlan of the Center for Food Safety. Look up that YouTube short video. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Bill.